You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 51 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
I'm Bor, aka Retroid.
And today we are joined by James, who is one of the people behind next month's Superbike Festival, a game music festival in Manchester.
Hi guys, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's great to have you. We're going to be obviously talking about the festival later and lovely juicy details about that. But first we've got some intriguing bits to do because we did no news last week because it was the 50th.
We had the day off.
Yeah, we got the day off to just talk about crazy stuff.
No, news had the day off.
Yeah, news had the day off. This is what we missed. Well, this one's one we missed. Everything else was sort of newish. But anyway, my Blu-ray collection, you know. Our Blu-ray collection. It's steadily growing and all that.
Well,
you know?
It's steadily grown over the past like 2 years.
Yeah,
we've got like a shelf full of them.
But not as much as our DVD collection.
Well, no,
gathering since before. But don't worry, because the successor for Blu-ray is now being planned by Panasonic and Sony, so it's fine. You know, we're just...
I was worried for a moment there.
They've decided to ignore the whole move towards download-only, thinking that obviously people will still want optical media. And they are pushing for a form of physical storage, disk space, that will produce 4K movies rather than 1080p. And you would be looking at a movie taking up at least 100 gig of disk space in comparison to a Blu-ray's sort of 50 gig levels.
To be fair, in terms of 4K, anybody apart from Retroid just would struggle to play a 4K film, you know, streaming
this
over the internet.
Everybody but Retroid. At the same time, can the human eye notice the difference between 4K and 1080p on a screen that's maybe no bigger than, I don't know, one of the 40-inch kind of size TVs or whatever?
See, that's why you'd need to get like a 50 or 60-inch.
Right, so basically the only reason you would have something with 4K is because you've got a huge-ass TV.
Or just to piss my dad off, because he's always got to have the newest tech first.
Okay.
Well, it's interesting because I know a lot of people like having sort of DVD collections and Blu-ray collections or whatever, but I'm personally not one of those people. I like having it all digital, all downloaded. Like, I've got a few DVDs, but generally, once I've watched them, unless I know I'm going to watch them again, I'll probably just sell them on or, like, get rid of them or whatever. Yeah. But I think, like, if this huge sort of, you know, 100 gig DVD comes, not DVD, you know, the successor to Blu-ray, whatever the name would be, like, it'd be great if they could have it sort of like a whole season, a whole series of a TV show, or like, you know, a whole trilogy of films on the one disc in like 1080p or whatever, because rather than having like huge like shelves full of space, you've just got like a few, but it's like the content's more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Rather than having like one DVD for one film or one, you know, whatever it's called.
That would be cool.
Can we make it backwards bloody compatible properly this time as well? Like HD DVD was.
Well, most Blu-ray players will play DVDs.
Pretty much all.
Yeah, but as in the format of the disc. One of the things I never bought one. One of the things I liked about HD DVD was that it could have the red DVD layer on it as well as the blue HD DVD layer. So you could walk into a shop. Well, you walk into a shop now and it says, you know, DVD, Blu-ray and ultraviolet download copy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Triple play. One of the huge advantages that I saw with HD DVD was that you could walk into a shop and something would say HD DVD, DVD compatible. You'd buy it, you'd get one disc in the box, you'd pop your disc in your DVD player, you would watch the DVD copy. If you upgraded to an HD DVD player, if you did, I'm sorry. But that, you know, them's the bricks. But if you popped it in the same disc into an HD DVD player, it would then play in high definition.
That's cool. I did not know that.
That sounds pretty awesome. But it was
that was a fantastic feature of it.
And considering, like, this disc is supposedly holding, you know, 300 gig or more, that's easily a possibility that you could have, like, the Blu-ray disc of 50 gig on the same disc.
I am curious
the whole
what this
of the Star Wars films on one disc at long last.
Yeah, four, five, and six.
Yeah. I don't think we'd be that lucky. But another thing that strikes me about the sort of like push to 4K and going back to the TV screen sizes, at some point they're going to propose something for which you only get a benefit of with a TV screen that is pretty huge, that is beyond the capacity of not just British homes, but in fact they probably pan a 4K. I can't imagine many people living in, say, Tokyo in Japan or Seoul in South Korea having living space big enough for a huge ass television that does 4K.
I can understand, you know, we've got 4K technology at the moment. It's mostly used for cinemas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
so unless like projectors become cheaper, or like where it's reasonable that you could buy a projector, like as you say, like space wise as well, you know, not that many people, especially living in a big city, would have space for like a 100-inch telly or whatever.
I don't think anyone really would, other than if the rich. And then it's like, well, that you don't want to limit something like that to just the rich, unless you're sort of like, is it Bang and Bung? But I can have Thingy and Loofson lot. The really
Bang and Olufsen.
Yeah. Somebody like that.
But I guess with any technology, it's like it's always going to be expensive at first, and then that's like where like the early adopters come in. And then once like they run out of sales, they lower it down so then like your average Joe can buy it kind of thing. I imagine it'll just be the same thing.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me about this is the stupidity of the market, and they're going for the next big thing. The thing with HD is that films have been HD for anything on film was HD, pretty much. Stuff like, if you go to, I've mentioned it before, but if you go to Netflix and you watch something like Quantum Leap, that was done on film. It's available in HD. It was filmed in the late 80s. But because it was, you know, on film, they can do it in HD. There you go. You've got, you know, it's ready. Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation that they're going through, and because they were done on film, they're HD ready. Was the film stock they were using for all those things ready for 4K format? No, they weren't. HD had ready-made content. 3D did not have ready-made content. 4K won't have ready-made content.
But as far as I'm aware,
a few really recent films.
As far as I'm aware, like film is analog, so you can blow it up sort of to a huge size in theory.
Yeah, but
it might be 4K compatible, depending on like the size of the film it was filmed in.
Maybe something like 70mm.
Yeah.
You know, the Lawrence of Arabia type of thing. You might be able to squeeze something close to 4K out of that, but that's debatable. And there are people who are far better qualified than me, and are, you know, far more cinephile. Than I am, but it's just HD had the content. One of the many reasons 3D has failed is because the content has to be made for it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And most of the time people go, I can't be arsed putting on the goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch something in HD. There we go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The fact that somebody like, was it ESPN in the US is closing down or has now closed down their 3D sports channels because nobody's watching stuff.
They threw money at that like nobody's business. Sport is supposed to be you've got to be able to, you know.
Isn't the new
sport is new. Mm. Yeah, that's the point of it. So, you know, it's got to be current.
Yeah.
And people still.
And I think you'll find that the BBC have announced that the Doctor Who special is going to be their last 3D project for a while as well.
Interesting.
I think adding to your point, it's sort of like it's an upgrade as well. Like I remember, like, you know, 10 years ago or probably a bit longer now, people were amazed at the difference between VHS and DVD. There was a huge difference, and like even like DVD to Blu-ray, it wasn't as big. But now that like pretty much everyone's got a flat screen TV, it's sort of more noticeable now. So more people are starting to buy Blu-rays, and now that they're more reasonably priced as well. but it's just like another one. It might be like a slow burner. Like, people aren't going to notice the difference between 1080 and 4K unless they go to the cinema all the time. But once, like, the bigger tellies or projectors, as the case may be, become the norm, it'll sort of get more used to, really. And, like, the content as well, as you said before, like, you know, there needs to be more things filmed for that particular, like, resolution.
Yeah. I mean, went round my parents this past weekend and, you know, kind of had a conversation about, like, Blu-ray and whatnot, and they can't actually tell the difference, like, because they've just got, like, I think it's Talk Box. And it includes, like, the HD channels, so, yeah. Like, BBC One HD and stuff like that. And my parents seriously could not tell the difference between standard definition on that TV and high definition on that TV.
And we
noticed a, you know, improvement in quality.
Oh, yeah. Hands up, as in audio hands up, if you had relatives who, when you were showing them DVD for the first time, they honestly just stood there going, I can't see any difference. VHS is good enough. That would be me. I had relatives who said that.
I think I might have as well, yeah. That I think back to that time.
And DVD was a far easier sell.
Mm.
Than saying, oh no, if you get a much larger TV than you've got, and it has to be a new TV because it has to be 4K, whereas, it's like, yeah, the part of the problem with Blu-ray is DVD is, in a lot of ways, good enough for most people.
True.
Yeah, definitely. And like any sort. I'm sorry.
No, any
film, like generally a lot of films that you watch, you don't really need HD. I'd argue, like, say, action films or maybe like sort of documentaries, maybe like nature documentaries, they'd probably benefit hugely from high definition. But if you're just watching like comedies or soaps, it's like it's not really that much of a difference. Like, I'll admit sports is a huge one in HD. Like, if I've gone out and, like, someone's been watching sports, not in HD anymore, it's barely watchable for me because it's, like, that bad. But, like, generally, a lot of programs, like I don't care if a comedy program's in HD or not. I don't need to see, you know, Jason Bateman's face in HD. It's not really necessary.
Although one of the things about Blu-ray that was actually mentioned was the fact that the discs themselves are meant to be more durable. Like, obviously with a DVD, you scratch it and, you know, it jumps around all the time. And, you know, plenty of people have had that issue where a film has become almost unplayable because the discs accidentally got scratched. Blu-ray was meant to kind of, you know, either have another layer to it or, you know, some sort of resistance to it so that, you know, that wouldn't happen. It's the far less easy to, you know, ruin your discs. Will this new Blu-ray upgrade, as it were, do that?
I'm trying to think of the equivalent of whether or not with tape anything ever got more robust as the medium progressed.
Tape?
Tape
was bloody awful. I lived through VHS tape. I had a huge collection of VHS tape. I hated the hell out of it.
when the tape would get tangled around the sprocket in the VHS recorder.
The general fuzziness. If it would start jumping. It's things that were recorded on one...
I miss Betamax.
Hey?
Betamax.
Oh, there's always one.
my dad somehow we didn't have a VHS for years, but we had Betamax, and we'd get given like old tapes from like AV enthusiasts that they didn't need or anything anymore, but weren't in too bad a nick, and we just record TV and stuff. But we got Betamax after the system had kind of failed, so we couldn't get pre-bought Betamax tapes or films or anything. It was just we just used it for recording.
By all accounts, it was a lot better than VHS, which I can believe.
It lasted a lot, like a Betamax tape would last a lot longer, and it could record more until obviously a long play and all that came along.
Did you know it was only in the last few years that Sony stopped manufacturing Betamax tapes? In Japan.
That was probably just due to demand from the media industry rather than...
Because even though it flopped kind of commercially in that kind of...
Consumer-based flop,
businesses were still using it.
Yeah. Okay, well, next up, Stan Lee got a little bit confused over some comments made by Andrew Garfield recently about Spider-Man, as a character as a whole, obviously, those of you who are actually many who didn't see the rebooted Spider-Man the other year, Andrew Garfield's the guy that plays him and Peter Parker kind of thing.
I thought he was an orange cat.
Spider-Man's Peter Parker? What?
Oh, I know.
Spoilers.
Basically, in an interview, I think it was recently with Entertainment Weekly, Andrew Garfield, or something like that. It was one of the sort of big American kind of entertainment presses. It was like, he was like, oh, you know, maybe they should like make Peter Parker or Spider-Man whether like bisexual or gay, because there's no real reason beyond obviously canon, essentially, he was sort of saying that he shouldn't be.
In this case, non-canon.
And then Stan Lee hadn't heard about these comments at all by Garfield. And then he kind of got ambushed about it by, I think it was comicbook.com at a con, like a week or so later. And comicbook.com wrote, when it was explained to Stan Lee that Andrew Garfield had suggested that Spider-Man become bisexual, Stan Lee responded, he's becoming bisexual? Really? Who have you been talking to? I don't know. Seriously, I don't know anything about that. And if it's true, I'm going to make a couple of phone calls. I figure one sex is enough for anybody.
Bless him.
Basically, it's by the sounds of things, he thought they were suggesting that Spider-Man should become a hermaphrodite, which is completely different to being bisexual.
Basically. Just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, come on, the guy's over 90. Is he over 90 now, or is he in his 80s? I can never remember.
He's at least in his 80s.
Yeah, he's...
According to comicsalliance.com, the article, it says he's 90, so...
Yeah, I think we can forgive him this. I don't think he was genuinely outraged. I think he was genuinely confused.
You know, all credit to him that he wasn't outraged.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
I think the comments he said before, sorry about him being a hermaphrodite. Okay. I think the quote what he said was, "I figure one sex is enough for anybody." I think that meant, "I figure one sex of potential partner." Yeah. Like, it's okay if he's gay, it's okay if he's straight, but being bisexual is just greedy. I don't know. That's what he sort of trying to say.
I don't think it was, because the way, because I think I saw like a clip or something of it, and it did sound like more he thought it was about having hermaphroditism or how to pronounce it. But either way, like, there's no reason why the character can't be. He's a teenager, and he's not
experiment, can't he?
Yeah, and he's not particularly right wing as a character.
Well, no. So, and it kind of fits in because he was a character from the 60s, wasn't he? So
yeah.
There you go.
But again, for any media representation of bisexuality to actually happen to a degree that doesn't just make it out like they're like greedy or something, that's going to be pretty difficult if it were to ever happen. Because I swear,
we've still got a fair bit to go with that, haven't we?
Yeah, it's like eight. I've just had a flashback to an episode of Doctors I had the misfortune of watching whilst ill a year or so ago.
The daytime soap.
Yeah, the daytime soap. And like, obviously it's BBC, so you think they'd be a bit sympathetic, but instead, like, in a way it was kind of realistic that this one character who was, or is, I can't remember if she was meant to be a lesbian or bisexual, or she was bisexual but going out for a lesbian, or something along these lines, she gets interviewed on like the local radio station on the program or something, and the host is like
Radio Norwich.
The host, he's a woman's like really unknowledgeable and ignorant, and just basically kind of bottled down to the whole, they're just being greedy argument, which is what a lot of people think bisexuality is. So it'd be kind of cool to make a prominent character like Spider-Man bisexual, because I mean, it's all well and good making characters gay, but if you make somebody bisexual, it's a form of sexuality that's even more misunderstood.
I mean, to be fair, but
you saying, James?
Oh, sorry, yeah. I mean, I think like it's okay them being like, you know, a different sort of less than the obvious sort of binary, you know, choice for sexuality, but as long as it's not like that's their sort of unique point as a character, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they can be bisexual, but it shouldn't just be like, hey, here's a bisexual character, woo! It should just be like, it's just a thing. It's not even like anything about their character, like their personality has got nothing to do with it.
Well, it's just, you don't have characters who are the blonde one.
Precisely. No. Yeah,
so,
precisely.
You know, what is that, why the hell not? Because it's not going to be the defining thing about them. I mean, who cares? And seriously, if you care about that, you need new hobbies.
I mean, it wouldn't be. I mean, because there's obviously people say, "Oh, but it's Spider-Man. You know, he's this and this. You shouldn't change these things." Obviously, there was a bit of outcry over an Ultimate, which is looking like it's on its last legs anyway. But when Ultimate Spider-Man, Morales took over,
He's a bloke beaten by a radioactive spider.
Yeah.
Shoot web from his hands.
But being bisexual is so unrealistic.
Yeah.
They have to do
something like that with an established character, because if you tried to make a new character who just happened to be bisexual, well, if you just tried to make new characters these days in DC or Marvel or resurrect older characters that only a select few remember, it doesn't tend to go very well. Mm. The sales are pretty poor. I mean, you have to do something with sort of like the main characters that are known. Or else...
Although, like, comics industry as it is.
Mm.
As far as I'm aware of, like, comics, like, they all seem to go off in, like, crazy tangents anyway. So, like, why not make a tangent where he just happens to be bisexual? It's sort of... Yeah. It's not, like, the main canon or whatever it is. It's, like, a different sort of set of stories.
Bearing in mind that there's also different universes. So you can just create a new universe where Spider-Man is bisexual.
At the same time...
And that wouldn't affect, you know... the canon.
But then it shouldn't have to be a problem that affects the canon anyway. You shouldn't have to
so it should be able to just be put in there.
How many times have these characters been bloody rebooted anyway?
Not enough.
Because Superior Spider-Man's still going on at the moment, isn't it? Or is that coming to an end?
No, that's still going on at the moment. I'm still reading a few of them, but I'm not.
But if that can happen, I think Peter Parker being bi is a far simpler thing that could happen.
It reminded me of like a certain outcry when in season 8 of Buffy. Buffy had like an experimentation type thing with one of the other Slayers, and it's like, oh, Buffy's gone lesbian. How dare they?
Yeah,
they
That's the thing. Whenever somebody...
She's a vampire slayer, for God's sake. She kills demons.
But it's not just that. But then that's the thing. Whenever somebody changes their sexuality and they haven't said whether or not they're gay or lesbian, the automatic assumption is if they start going after the same gender, it's, oh, they're gay or lesbian. It's like, well, no. What if they're bi? Do you know that's a possibility? No.
To be fair, some people are just curious, aren't they? So they just experiment.
Also, technically, she shagged two dead blokes.
Yeah, Buffy's...
So,
come
on.
I mean, I guess it's just like... I guess a lot of people in Hollywood are kind of like straight white guys writing stuff, so maybe if you're like a straight white middle-class person, you're not going to know what like a gay person's, you know, motivations or my bisexual person's motivations are. Just in a general sense, like, so it's like they don't want to write about that, not like because they dislike it, but just because they don't know, and they don't want to insult them by writing something that could be completely, you know, offensive.
At the same time, we have loads of male writers writing female characters in comics.
That goes so well.
Yeah. Thank you, DC. Thank you. Yeah. I think that's where the worst offence is happening at the moment in that regard.
I just thought that, you know, who would be really good for writing a bisexual, Peter Parker / Spider-Man?
Go on.
Let's get Frank Miller back.
Oh! That's just putting the cat among the pigeons and sealing them in with a friggin' AK.
Oh,
and 10 grenades.
Yeah,
it
could be worse. Could be Orson Scott Card.
Yeah, I was going to say, he could be Orson Scott Card. He could write a screenplay for the film.
I'm gonna move us on to, I think, probably...
Another disaster.
A disaster in the making.
I think it'll be the first time that the main character was the one to get fringed rather than the damsel in distress.
Oh, my God. Anyway, this has been bubbling along for a while, and Variety reported...
He should have been drowned.
Variety reported last week that the live-action Akira could still get the Hollywood treatment.
No,
leave it alone.
it's been in a form of development hell versus crazy ideas hell for several years. I think, was it when that sample script or supposed sample script got leaked the other year, and it looked like everything was moving to New Manhattan rather than Neo Tokyo, and
I call it Akira and I call it Bob,
and then setting it with people who were all very much under the age of 20, and so no angst of a teenage like depiction and all these various issues. And what was it, one character was a doctor, which I think was meant to be Kaneda, and then Tetsuo's equivalent would have been like a drug addict, and they had all been in like their mid-20s onwards, so nothing like Akira the anime. Or
do
Matthew.
Your own bloody film, leave Akira alone.
I'm sorry, I've just got this scene, you know, the scene where they're like shouting at each other, you know, yeah. It's like, Bob! Eric!
Baba!
That sounds like my home when I go back to see Dad, because his name's Bob.
I'm just going to like throw a spanner in the works and be like devil's advocate here. Like, a lot of the nerd slash geek, you know, sort of culture films that have come out recently have been sort of like fairly accepted. Like, I know like a lot of people liked Scott Pilgrim, which is, you know, based off the comic books. And like, you know, a lot of the superhero films recently have been sort of lauded by, you know, like regular movie-going folk and like nerd slash geeks alike. So I don't know. I think like it has promise. Okay. Like, I guess Akira, like when I think about it, some of the scenes are just so crazy that, you know, I don't know how they'd ever be imagined in sort of a real life situation. And all the heavy editing that was like originally going to happen doesn't sound too hot. But I guess like if they made it sort of close to the book, not the book, sorry, the film, you know, while being sort of... Or the manga, sorry, while being real action, you know, obviously mostly CGI like films are nowadays. It has potential to be good. Like, I'm just gonna go ahead and throw that out there.
I think one of my main issues with the remake idea is the fact that it does look like a form of whitewashing would be happening or race bending.
Yeah.
Can I interject? You know, with the Scott Pilgrim thing, you mentioned it was obviously directed by Edgar Wright, who's a massive kind of geek anyway. So it's more kind of people that love the culture doing films, you know, within that culture and getting it right. But I don't necessarily believe that Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well,
I mean,
he
may be like really into, you know, kind of anime.
Yeah,
and,
but
you
it's
know, manga
him and somebody
whatnot,
else,
but...
and it's like it's some sort of like studio that he's a producer at. That the guy that they've got potentially up. Because basically the only reason this has reared its ugly head again is because Verity reported that, is it Jaume Collet-Serra? The guy that directed the House of Wax remake and was responsible for directing Orphan, which had the creepy girl. He's potentially going to be the director if talks don't fall through again. And it's not obviously... somebody who's necessarily attuned to the original or its surrounding culture or its cultural impact, which fills me with a small sense of dread.
It could work if the aesthetic's right. Possibly.
Yeah. Personally, I think if you've got the situation where you're wanting to do a new Akira, well, first of all, you know, if you don't fall at the first hurdle, which is don't. if you don't fall there, then do an adaptation of the manga, which had a lot more going on than the anime. Because I've got the full run of the manga, and it is quite a bit more dense.
Huge.
It is huge, and it still looks brilliant as well. Just, you know, the amount of detail in the you know, the drawings, but do something like that. Do a series.
Yeah.
Don't do a bloody film.
I mean, yeah, TV series, like I should say, like, you know, so many of the modern TV series are sort of as good, if not better, than, like, films nowadays. Like, everyone I know is, like, loving Game of Thrones or, you know, Dexter, or I'm digging, like, Ray Donovan recently. So, like, you know, get a company like HBO or Showtime, you know, maybe BBC, get, you know, some big something going on and make a series of it, like, as you say, like, based on the, you know, the original mangas. It's a lot more detailed, but you could do like a good few seasons from it. Mm. And you know, that'd be maybe both sides happy, like nerds and, you know, regular TV watching.
Yeah,
it's very true.
Yeah,
whereas if it's just a remade film, I do not want.
No.
I also, at the same time, it makes me wonder how over the years, because it was the manga company that owns the rights to Akira that sold the rights to Warner for this film. And it just kind of makes me wonder how come a live-action version never happened in Japan in the first place before the rights sale happened several years ago.
Probably down to cash.
Think.
I think that the only way it could have been made was as an anime, because that's the only way you could get, you know, some of the absolutely, you know, batshit crazy things going on.
Mm.
Also, to add to that, I think, yeah, like the CGI as well a few years ago was, you know, pretty ropey, mm. especially, you know, compared to now. Whereas I think, like, now CGI is getting to the point where it's like you could probably realize some of those scenes and it doesn't look completely laughable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see some of them happening with CG. I just don't want to.
Hmm. I mean, I know the Japanese obviously don't mind kind of converting from like manga to anime, mm. but I've never really heard of them kind of converting from anime to live action.
Death Note.
Oh, that's a good point.
And Definitely. Battle Royale's a bit of a weird one, because that started off as a novel, then I think it was the films, and then they had a manga. But the order wasn't the traditional order mm. of how their sort of media products tend to go.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there are some other live action.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. No, I really can't think of anyone else at the moment. I know there are. But I can't think who. Braid's dying a bit.
If you think of any, yeah. tweet us.
Do you know what, though? Thinking of Akira, though, something that I wouldn't mind. I think it would work as live action just due to the fact that it's pure sci-fi, whereas Akira's, like, dystopian sci-fi future with psychedelic hallucinations on an epic scale. I think something that would work live action is something like Ghost in the Shell.
Hmm.
You know, similar sort of, you know, it was made a couple of years after Akira, but it does have it's kind of like got the right mix of kind of believability in terms of the visuals anyway, and the concepts of what are being displayed, though at the same time, there's a couple of things, and I think like the original film that are actually happening, which is a bit strange.
Well, yeah, technology does that.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be averse to Ghost in the Shell live action. But then again, it's like, well, would I want it to be all sort of like American and other sort of Caucasian individuals mostly playing the roles?
Yeah, can we have the Japanese doing Japanese stuff, please?
Be nice to see some Japanese people on the screen. And admittedly, though, I mean, did get to see that bit with the Wolverine, so, you know, that was cool.
We've come so far, we don't have big, you know, films in the cinema anymore with, you know, big name actors wearing makeup and pretending to be you know, ethnic minorities. You know, like Lone Ranger or anything. You know, we've gone beyond that, and to Avatar,
mm-hmm.
Last Airbender,
yeah.
Oh dear.
Oh god, yeah, no, not good.
I'm gonna move us away from this to something which I don't think it's necessarily bad news, it's interesting. Last week, Blizzard announced during their latest results call that Titan is A, it's been put back. Titan has been put back for the great big MMO they've been working on. And which is okay, because obviously if they think they need more time to work on it, fine. But the most interesting thing that was said during the call was that it probably won't be a subscription based MMO. You know, it's a complete opposite, obviously, of World of Warcraft, which is still subscription based after you get past, you know, level 20.
But that, are they thinking sort of Guild Wars, that kind of?
I think they're looking at a free to play model. I mean, they haven't said it's definitely, but Mike is it Mike Morheim, said that, well, we can't talk about the details yet. It is unlikely to be a subscription-based MMORPG. I also want to reiterate that there has not been an official announced or projected release date. So it's not even that necessarily that it's been put back. That's just there's no official release date yet. But apparently, like, oh, was it like a few, well, more than a few months ago, like a lot of staff that had been working on Titan, I think, got moved so that they could rethink the direction.
That's always a good
of the MMO and what they were going to do with it. I suppose they're obviously looking at what's been happening with, like, WoW, which during that call, they said they had 7.7 million active subscribers in June of this year. If you go back almost 5 years ago to December 2008, the game had 11.5 million subscribers, and I believe 2008 was the last year that they saw any growth in subscription numbers, so then it's been slowly decreasing over this five-year period.
Yeah, probably.
I think that sounds like. Go on.
I think they're probably looking at other kind of models of making money from the games. Like, say, for example, what Team Fortress 2 has, which is basically you buy items and
hats.
But, how many other games can really employ.
Literal mini hats.
How many games can really employ a hat economic model, though?
Well, not necessarily hat, but, you know, obviously weapons and you know, gear and stuff like that. If you're actually paying. Real money for like digital items like that, then I can see.
I'm making a massively online game based entirely in a tailor's.
Although you can,
excellent.
Or you can make, you know, you could do it in like a smithy. You know,
that's true.
Something like that. That could work.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of just gonna say what you were saying before, like, just like video game, like the economics of it, what people wanting to buy has changed in the past few years. Like, I guess it's just a sign of the times. People don't want to be paying, you know, 10 quid a month or whatever it is to be stuck on the computer playing a game, whereas they can just come back to a game every now and then. Because with stuff like the Steam sales, people just buy loads and loads of games and never play them. I've been guilty of it myself. Got a few games that I've just not touched yet, but I've bought them because they were like really cheap. And so I guess like people just like paying a contract basically to keep playing the games, just sort of, it's not really sustainable anymore. Like, and people buying extras either pay to win, like, because I know a lot of the games are kind of like pay to win, pay to like be a lot better at the game, or in the case of like Team Fortress, pay for sort of funny items that like sort of make you look better or whatever, like, you know, costume changes or hats, as we said before. I think like it's definitely just sort of the way it's changing, just with like smartphones and Facebook games and all that. Like, video gaming's changing in the next couple of years, and it's going to be interesting where it goes.
There's more fracturing going on.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Eve continues to stand there strong and lord itself over us with 4,000 plus player battles. Sorry, I had to get that in somewhere. I think I would have. Has anyone seen pictures
and
video of that? No, it wasn't. I've
seen some pictures.
They were, because I was a subscriber for a bit, and I got an email last week boasting about it. Going, oh yeah, we had, you know, huge ass frigging battle. As the, I think some, if not all, the same groups from the 3,000 plus ship battle that happened earlier this year. Sort of like, oh, was that January or February time? It was just kind of like people still pay for Eve. At the same time, you've got a core group of users on there who don't actually have to pay any money because they spend enough time on the game in order to earn enough in-game money to pay for their subscription.
Yeah.
Crikey.
They make enough Plex to pay for their own subscription. It's crazy. I can't imagine many games, unless you've got a properly worked out in-game economy, I can't imagine many games giving you a situation whereby you can play and develop things enough that you can use in-game stuff to pay for your in-game time.
Yeah, Eve does seem to be like a particularly crazy universe. Like, I was reading some article where they actually they've hired accountants, or they've hired like sort of accountancy experts to be like in-game economy managers, because some people like found this glitch where they could sort of get a weapon, I think, for really cheap or something like that. But that weapon apparently was worth loads of in-game money. And I think it was gonna potentially rupture the whole system and like potentially damage Eve permanently.
It's a good job nothing like that could happen in the real world.
Oh wait, commodity trading.
Crazy, isn't it?
A lot of people, I think there were a couple of people kind of looking forward to tying, because obviously Blizzard and MMO essentially just kind of goes together now.
Yeah.
But yeah. If it's not the how you pay to play it that concerns me, it's the, as James is saying, it's more the how you have to put your time in that concerns me more. I mean, because we did that review of Ragnarok 2 online for Hex, which Paul and Retroid and me suffered through, and I wasted over 20 hours of my holiday that I had recently trying to play this thing. And if I missed a day of play, I don't know if it happens if you've got a completely free service. We were given some in-game sort of like subscription thing by PR. But if you missed a day, it tried to chastise you by having this chart that would come up going, oh, you haven't got this stuff today. And it had like this really cute sort of plant with like cute flowers crawling up it and stuff, looking kind of sad and whatever if you hadn't managed to like log in for the day.
Like emotional blackmail.
It was...
Yeah.
I was just... Yeah, so I don't like models of that, but that was a bit of pay to win situation going on.
Does that happen on Nintendogs? Like, yeah, miss a day and they're dead.
No, they don't die, but if you
come
don't...
Come back to them and they die.
If you don't see the dogs for, like, a day or more, then and you boot
they,
it up...
They couldn't find a home and they had to be destroyed.
Oh, it's more they're covered in fleas and they're not as happy as they previously were. I haven't been on, even though I love it...
Your dogs have been confiscated by the RSPCA.
You do what? I haven't been on Animal Crossing in about a week, and this isn't because I haven't wanted to, it's because I've been too busy launching Hex. I hate to think what my town has descended into during this period of time.
I haven't been there for 3 weeks, so I'm imagining going back on there and just finding everything stripped.
The villagers destroyed. Are going to be, you know, holding pitchforks and torches and stuff.
I'm thinking more of a Lord of the Flies situation.
Yeah.
Just sort of turn up.
Here, Cookie, you have not been back for a while. Now die.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough. That's all good.
Yeah. That's right.
You'll walk into Tom Nook's and there'll be, you know, human torsos.
Oh, bugger, the last thing I did was I actually signed up to a loan for him to renovate my house to a bigger house. Oops.
Oh, I did that and it just takes...
You crashed the economy.
Yeah. I did.
Yes. You haven't paid your mortgage, so we're going to break your legs.
He does always seem a bit threatening, like, dear Mr. Nook. Anyway, I'm going
to... Wonga.
I'm gonna move us on to our last piece of news for this week, which is our biggest piece of news.
Yeah, if
news,
you haven't heard it already.
Yay! Which everyone's heard it. So this is obviously purely, as per usual, an opinionated discussion with maybe some well thought out views. The new Doctor was announced last night. Yay!
Yes!
That sounded like a Dalek then.
As one publication decided to point out, he's 25 years older than Matt Smith.
So?
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
That's the beauty of regeneration.
Yeah.
You won't go around sexing all the bloody human ladies.
No, and to be fair, William Hartnell was the same age when he first stepped into the TARDIS in 1963.
Which, like Christ on a bike, he did not look 55, William Hartnell.
No, that's fair comment.
Okay,
but...
so if you haven't somehow heard, which, to be honest, the way Twitter's been over the past day and a bit of Facebook, you know, it's probably unlikely you haven't heard, but can somebody just say the name?
Peter
Capaldi.
Or Malcolm Tucker.
Before we started the show, we actually had a bit of a discussion about how to pronounce his surname, and I think it's Capaldi, as in, like, almost like Baldy. But with a K and the P instead of the B. So, Capaldi.
I think Capaldi because it is Scottish.
Yeah.
I have Scottish blood, so I'm just going to say that means I know how to automatically pronounce everything.
Brilliant. Fair. Oh, if you haven't realised, though, this gentleman is I can never remember the character's name from The Thick of It. The one that's...
Malcolm Tucker.
Malcolm Tucker.
He's the pretty much the psycho one, though, isn't he?
Yes.
He's the famous one that they keep having to really, really carefully look through entire episodes just so they can find several seconds in a row where he's not swearing his head off.
He's also appeared on at least one episode of Doctor Who previously.
Fires of Pompeii.
He was also apparently in Torchwood, which is shit.
Children of Earth.
I'd just say again, Torchwood is shit.
What was he in? What was he playing in?
He was under secretary type thing for the PM or something like that.
Yeah.
He was in the political bit.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And he was also in World War Z.
Yes.
As a very, as a character called, was it WHO Doctor, according to IMDb?
Oh, yes. World Ooh, Health. Doctor. Yeah. He was a doctor at the World Health Organization's random testing laboratory somewhere off of, was it Aberystwyth Way? Or was it Cardiff Way? It was somewhere in Wales. It was meant to be based. Awesome.
So he's been Doctor Who, or he's going to be Doctor Who, and he's previously been Who Doctor.
Yeah. How cool is that? How freaky is that? That is just awesome.
Also, who here watched the live unveiling?
We were out, unfortunately.
I was busy winning at bingo. Sorry.
Bingo.
Yeah.
House.
Actually, I tend to we tend to call out if we've got a little Cornish people mixed with some. It seems to end up as a situation of going ear, ear,
ear,
ear. when you get a line or house bingo, we don't just differentiate between two because we know which part of the game we're playing.
I think I saw that episode of that Cornish Doctor one. I think that was on.
Damn it! Anyway, Peter.
Wasn't it absolutely awesome that he wrote into Doctor Who magazine or whatever it was,
Radio Times, when he was 15?
Yeah, and he apparently got Doctor Who scripts.
Yeah.
As a, you've written into us. Here, have some scripts.
That is awesome.
So he has been a lifelong Doctor Who fan, and now he is becoming Doctor Who.
That's pretty.
That must be a dream come true.
That to me is brilliant, mind. And he is an absolutely fantastic actor. So
for those of us who were playing bingo or otherwise engaged, what was the live reveal show like?
Bloody awful!
Wow.
It had a few moments where I was just shouting, just reveal the fucking actor now. Just reveal him.
Stop it.
Reveal.
Yeah, why have they got them on? Why are you talking to... I don't care. Just have the actor on.
To be fair, it's got to be expected that they're going to do like a, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire type, oh, yes, and we'll let you know after the break.
What I really found quite
BBC, so there were no breaks.
Yeah, but it's that kind of delay.
Yeah.
What really sort of annoyed me a little bit as well was they had an interview with Matt Smith to begin with, and he actually said, I'm really wishing the new guy luck, he's going to be ace and all this.
It's not going to be a woman.
Yeah. And then they did an interview with Stephen Moffat 5 minutes later where he was like, well, actually, I think it could be time that we have a woman and all this. And I'm thinking, well, you can't be, because you've just done an interview where you've just admitted he's a male. What the... Ooh. You should have done it the other way around.
Curse you, English language, with your gendered word. It's a good job it wasn't in French.
But don't you think it would have been
that would have been helped to do interviews without mentioning our gender?
But what I thought was, why didn't they put the Stephen Moffat interview on first to build up the suspense, and then the Matt Smith interview? Because then it'd be a case of, oh, that's fair enough. Rather than, well, why are you saying this, you pillocks? You've already just told us it's a bloke.
Well, I know a lot of people have been saying like about it, oh, it should be a woman, or it should be, you know, a non-white man or whatever. But I think like sort of what we were discussing with the Spider-Man story before, it shouldn't matter that they're a woman or a black person, as long as it's not like made a big deal of, like it's not their personal sort of their main character. Because like, I feel like sometimes if they did that, it'd be like just so they could tell people like who are moaning about Doctor Who. They go, well, actually, we've had a woman once, so shut up. So I don't know. It's sort of a funny one, that really.
Now you mention it, I did a thing for Hex last week about Big Finish Audio. They have actually done an audio play with a woman doctor. It was a series called Unbounded, where they just threw the shackles off and did crazy things with the doctors that people didn't think would work. And they actually did one with a woman doctor. It was really good, actually. But what they did was they didn't make it about it being a woman doctor. It was just the doctor who happened just to be in a woman's body. And it just went along like normal. You know, so like you said, so it actually does work. But I think everybody was just... it would have been an interesting twist, I think. Definitely would have been an interesting twist. But I've got to say, I'm really pleased with the decision they've made, because he's going to be a great doctor. Well, he should be anyway.
Yeah, there was a rumour going around as well, which wasn't as prominent, but that it could have been Idris Elba. Which, personally, I thought would have been bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
Because he's another fantastic actor.
One interesting thing that I'm actually still waiting to see is obviously the Doctor changes his kind of sense of style from person to person. Yes. So what kind of thing would Peter Capaldi's Doctor actually wear?
I'm very curious about that.
I'm currently thinking it's going to be harking back to a slightly meaner Doctor. I think we're going to end up with a meaner Doctor. I don't think he's going to be very friendly.
I'm hoping he might be... more sort of, you know, Edwardian.
Yeah.
Sort of, like, you know, 19th century.
Well, that's like cool. Wait, are you trying to say you want him to be a dandy? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'll just say my favourite Doctor is not Pertwee. Sorry, but it's not. But I quite like the style of, is it Paul McGann's?
Yeah.
And, you know, just something, he's a time traveller and he's an alien. He doesn't have to be contemporary.
No.
Well, maybe they could sort of just make it a non sequitur, make him like a sort of mid-90s skate kid or something. He'd be like, Red,
oh,
dude.
Jesus Christ, no. No.
The Sonic the Sonic skateboard.
No. Oh, God. Okay, yeah, let's reboot him like they did with Constantine.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
We might have reviews for new Constantine going up on the site.
Constantine?
And a new feature. Sorry?
Constantine?
Constantine.
Yeah, Constantine for like a teen version of Constantine, maybe.
Anyway, Doctor, I do wonder how the relationship between the Doctor and Clara is going to play out a bit.
If you can kick her out of the TARDIS 30 seconds after regenerating, that would be awesome.
See, I think it might go a bit more like the original Doctor, sort of like a...
I was hoping more of a father figure thing.
Yeah, father figure or granddad thingy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And daughter. That'd be quite interesting.
Because he's had his run of running around sexing... you know, alien girls from council estates and all sorts. can we stop that now? Because the old Doctor didn't do that. Because the old Doctor, the original Doctor, was far too alien for that. He liked humans, but because they were one of his favourite aliens, not because he kept falling for them.
Well, I mean, the thing about Matt Smith's Doctor is that he's always had a reason for picking that companion. Like, with Amy Pond and Rory, it was like there was something weird about them.
Matt Smith was a lot better for that. Yeah. You know, his character was a lot better. He was far more, as like I've said before, he was channeling Tom Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was much happier with, you know, his thing.
But the thing is that Clara... her mystery has been unraveled now. It's been solved.
Mm.
So, I mean, will they get rid of Clara?
It'd be kind of sad if they got rid of her after just the one series.
I didn't like her.
You don't like many of the companions, admit it.
I like Amy.
There we go. You don't like many companions.
I like Rory as well. I thought he was a good character. See, it's because of the character.
Did you like Ace?
Not really. Mind you, most of the companions from that era are bloody hated. But they...
What about Adric? What about Adric? Oh, he was cool.
No one liked Adric. Especially cool. The other actors.
He sacrificed his life for the Doctor, you evil bugger.
I'm gonna move us on to the final part of the show before war it somehow happens to break for yeah, over
some
scope.
Sort of time war.
Yeah, some sort of time war. So James, Superbike Festival, dude. Oh man.
Yeah.
We've hinted that there's music involved and it could be of a game-like nature. But I suppose, first off, I think we need to let people know what it is and where it is and when. So do you want to give us those three key details for a moment?
Okay, basically Superbike Festival is a two-day festival of music, retro video gaming. We've got sort of workshops, and so we've got a marketing gallery as well. So it's going to be art, music, video games. So basically, if you're sort of a fan of nerds and geek culture, you're probably going to really enjoy this event. What chip music is, if you're not aware, it's not a genre as such. It's more a medium of creating music. It's using old computers and old consoles. Like, common ones include the Nintendo Game Boy, the NES, the Sega Mega Drive, and the Commodore 64 and Amiga.
I was waiting to see if you said Commodore 64 because I was waiting. I was perched.
Oh no, we're trying to appeal to every sort of fans of all sort of the ages of retro gaming. So we've got a huge lineup from literally all around the world. And tickets wise, people have been buying tickets from all around the world. Like, we've got loads of Germans coming, so we're not mentioning the war. And we've got just loads of Europeans. Wait,
you
coming
can mention the console war.
Yeah, we can mention the console hall, that's fine. basically, that's what sort of the idea is centered around. I've been putting on shows of chip music since 2007, and my companion Adrian, aka Megabytes, he's been putting on shows for ages, but he's done this Megabyte show in 2011 in Manchester, and it sort of took off really well, and we've sort of collaborated. And basically, last year, we did a two-day festival. It was the Friday in Liverpool, and the Saturday in Manchester, and it was a really successful event. A few people came to both, had a really good time, and so we just sort of figured we'd combine our resources and do a two-day festival in the same place, which is Manchester.
Cool.
I approve wholeheartedly of all this.
Excellent. How much do tickets cost?
It's going to be £25 if you buy them online at superbikefestival.co.uk, which we highly recommend because it's going to be more expensive on the door. So if you fancy coming, even if you don't fancy coming, buy a ticket to support us.
But, smoothly done.
Yeah. Do you want me to go into the lineup now? Or?
Could you tell us what the dates are a moment before going into lineup? Because that'd be good.
Yeah, no problem. It's Friday the 13th and Saturday the 14th of September 2013 in Jarvis Clegg, which is in the city centre of Manchester.
Wow. Okay, so tell us about what amazing acts you've got coming in, because I was looking at the site and it's looking pretty hot.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's the most ambitious gig I've put on to date, definitely. The most ambitious gig Adrian's put on to date recently. I mean, altogether. Basically, we're really excited because we've got Anna Managuchi playing. And Anna Managuchi might be a band you've already heard of, because basically the Scott Pilgrim video game that was released on Xbox Live and PSN Network, they did the soundtrack to that. So you may have already heard some Anna Managuchi music. And basically they're a hugely successful chiptune / pop-punk rock band. And they've just released an album, and it's been really hugely accepted. Everyone seems to dig it. Music critics from even outside of nerd geek culture sort of into it as well. And it's just a really sort of good crossover chip music album. And they're playing a few dates in the UK, but the only date north of London is us in Manchester. So it's definitely worth coming if you want to see them, because they're probably not going to come over for a while. So that's what we're sort of basing that on. And we've also got Saberpulse, who's like the UK's most successful chip musician. He's played sort of shows and festivals all around the world. He's probably like, again, he's like an artist that you may have heard of if you're not even into chip music, because like some of his stuff has become really successful. And sort of he's doing this first show in Manchester for a while. I think it might be his first show in Manchester altogether, to be honest. He's played Liverpool before, but this is his first show in Manchester, so we're looking forward to that. And just like a few more lineups, we've got 8-Bit Weapon from America as well. They do like Commodore 64, Amiga, Apple II. They use like all sorts of consoles in their sets. And they're like really excited to play, and we're really excited to have them. And just like we, more acts from all around the world, basically. We've got Eat Rabbit from France, Nordloaf from Sweden, Mineo from Spain, Skip Cloud from Northern Ireland, just loads of guys, loads of UK guys as well. Like Shiraban, who's another really popular guy in the UK. Got Mizkai, who's like become really huge sort of in chip music circles at the moment. She's like remixes by famous Japanese artists like Maru, and like she's been getting loads of good press recently. And apparently her set's going to be like this crazy sort of all-out kawaii super mental party. So she's sort of been hyping us about that. I'm really excited to see that. And so, yeah, it's just generally a huge show that we're really looking forward to.
With the games that you're hoping that people be able to have a sort of take a go on, what are you hoping to have like on the floor there, basically? What are you hoping?
Okay, so basically, the Saturday afternoon is going to be like, it's not going to be a show because the Friday evening will be a gig. So everyone will obviously be tired from that. So, you know, you get up, have some brekkie or whatever, and then come to sort of just chill out. We've got the Retro Computer Museum, who are like sort of charity dedicated to the preservation of computer consoles, and also the Manchester Computer Club. They've sort of, they're going to provide the video games for us. So there'll be loads sort of dotted around. So you'll be able to play and stuff. And a lot of the cases, they have like, it's just loads of games. So it's one of them, like, you just sort of ask and they'll probably like swap games, or, you know, they might even have the games out for you to swap. But, and we've got a few gaming tournaments as well. So like, if you remember Games Master, they've got the golden joysticks.
Oh, wicked.
We've sort of, we're not saying we're sort of, we've completely taken the copyrighted idea, but we're giving away golden joysticks if you win some of these gaming tournaments. And the tournaments include Super Street Fighter 2 for the SNES.
Wicked.
Sonic the Hedgehog, which is going to be like a speed run. Yeah, so,
apt in many ways.
It's like Super Smash. Green Hill Zone.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be Green Hill Zone, yeah, just because that'll be the easiest one to launch. Yeah, and also Super Smash Bros. Melee for the GameCube, so that's a bit more recent. But again, it's sort of like, it's old enough where it could probably be called retro nowadays. And another one I'm looking forward to is Bomberman for the Sega Saturn.
Which I was going to ask if you were doing Bomberman.
I think we're going to try and get a 16-player game of Bomberman sorted, because one of the like the companies who are helping us out, they've got like loads of multi-taps and all that. So hopefully we're going to have like a really insane 16-player Bomberman on like a huge screen. So that's going to look amazing, and that'll be worth coming just to see that.
At one of the after parties at the Eurogamer Expo about 2 years ago, they had Nintendo Disco doing the you know, the music. And they had a few game tournaments as well going, which were anyone else hear that?
Yeah.
Like fun. Yeah. I don't think that was mine. I have no idea what that is. Anyway, right. yeah. So they had
that was part of the promotion, of this, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that on purpose.
Of course. you just need better bass line on it. They had Nintendo Disco doing music, and they had various game tournaments, Super Street Fighter 2, things like that. But yeah, Bomberman as well, and I got quite close to, you know, I was reasonable at that, but I got blown up.
Well, you know, try and come down and, you know, claim the trophy for Nerds Assemble. I'm laying down the gauntlet.
I think, Retrod, you're probably nearest to getting to this, aren't you?
What, the southern town of Manchester?
Yeah.
From where I am. But yeah, my only problem would be, I think it's going to be very close to the Eurogamer Expo, so I'm not sure if I could organise that.
Listen, otherwise, forget that. Superbike Festival's where you need to be.
Oh, all right.
I would love to.
Sorry, I just have to mention our last tournament as well. It's Mario Kart.
Oh.
Every single round is a different version of the game.
Ooh.
That's awesome.
Oh, so we've got, you know, we've got Wii, we've got SNES, we've got, you know, 64, GameCube. So we're not going to tell you which order it's going to be in, but that'll be an exciting one to sort of... You'll have to practice on every game, basically.
That's cool. Yeah, I like the sound of that. Well, thank you, James, for explaining what sounds like an amazing festival. I hope it goes really well, because obviously that means you can do another one next year. So, yes, fantastic.
Yeah, we need more things like that.
Well, I'm afraid that is all we've got time for this week. So it's goodnight from...
This is James, Calm Down Kidder, representing Superbike Festival, which is superbikefestival.co.uk, Friday the 13th, Saturday the 14th of September in Manchester.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. You can also find me at hexdimension.com and thegamejar.com.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. You can also stumble across my website at drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're also on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. If you listened last week, you may be unaware that we have a new sister website called Hex Dimension, which you can go and visit at hexdimension.com. There's loads of cool stuff going on there, reviews, features, opinions. We've got an interview with a guy that made a game which you can't win through traditional means called Dear Mother. We talked to him, that went up there. We've got reviews of The Wolverine. We've got an amazing reading list that Cookie's put together for Wolverine comics. I would say it's pretty solid. You get a kind of full range of emotions. I mean, admittedly, there's none of the kids on there, but that's fine. But anyway, we've got lots of cool stuff on there. So,
That's more links than four copies of Four Swords.
But with the new DVD replacement or Blu-ray replacement, it'll be only on one side.
Yeah. Brilliant. Anyway, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.